is case number 10,434, Flexera Inc. This is a discussion.
Yeah, this, you've seen the opinion by now, and everybody knew about it anyway.
Yes.
You've probably not had a chance to read the memo I put together just to send out, but it's just to whittle it down a little bit. There were two issues, by and large, that the court found to be problems. One of them, I'll take the second one first, because we already started with that one. That was what are generally called field trips by the judges. And the problem with field trips is that they're supposed to be limited just to give, in this case, the board members, or to allow you to get a better understanding of the evidence. So what that means is that the evidence has to come from the witnesses, either by their testimony or whatever they submit in writing, photographs, what have you. You can go out and just get a better understanding if somebody says, you know, these things look like they're really close together. Sometimes that's hard to visualize in your mind. You can go out and take a look at it, see what he meant by that statement. Or if you get alternative statements, and I used an example from that case because somebody had said, I think Sam Burke had said, well, that tower is going to cast shadows on the beach. And I think there was a point where the other guy who came in for the Flexera folks said, well, it's no different than what's being cast by a house or a telephone pole or other stuff out there. So you've got two competing statements. You can go out and look and try to get an idea as to which one of those, if either, is actually correct or which one makes more sense. But to use that same example, if there had been somebody that said, well, there's shadows being cast and they're really going to be a mess, and there wasn't any statement to the contrary, you can't go out there and make a determination that was not appropriate, because that's the evidence at the hearing. So you're pretty much stuck with the evidence that you get at the public hearing by going out and saying to yourself, well, guy didn't know what he was talking about. That shadow is no worse than the guy's satellite dish next door. That would be evidence that didn't come at the hearing and so would be technically inadmissible. So the purposes of your field trips from now on really have to be more limited to just understanding the evidence that's being presented, or if you get one of those situations where you have competing statements and you want to try to figure out which of those two is the better one or the one that makes more sense.
Mm-hmm.
And so what that probably does mean, Brent, since you mentioned it, is probably the after-the-fact hearings have to be limited, really, to just those competing statements.
Statements.
Yeah.
Okay. Rick, how about beforehand? I mean, we just got a case. We can go look at the case.
Yeah, beforehand, if you want to go survey the property, take a look at, the lay of the land, that sort of thing.
Like we've been doing.
Yeah, as long as you come back with an open mind and then just base your decision on what you hear.
So, Rick, when you come back, you shouldn't say, I went to look at that case.
No,
that
would be the time you could say I'd looked at it and inquire to the applicant.
Yeah, okay. And that's the alternative. If you go out and you have questions in your own mind, ask somebody, and that way the evidence, which is going to be the answer, is going to come from somebody at the hearing.
Okay.
So, for example, let's say you had been out there at this property beforehand, you'd seen the shadows, and somebody at the hearing says, well, that thing's going to make some or cast some really big shadows,
mm-hmm.
and you knew from your prior visit that wasn't the case, or that there was a water tower next door that was going to be twice as bad, you could say to that person, well, you know, what about that water tower right next door? Is it any worse than that? And that way you've gotten that information into the record the appropriate way.
So, Rick, that's where we messed up at afterwards.
Yeah.
That you're saying on this case.
Looked at the case again.
You went back. Well, it wasn't just that you looked at it, but you came back and you all made statements on the record as to your personal observations.
Right. And we had opinions.
Yeah, and personal observations and opinions are... Yeah, I didn't think it was all that big a problem or something like that, which really wasn't focusing on anything that anybody had said.
Okay.
You were just kind of interjecting yourselves into the process, and you became witnesses, and that's what you can't do.
Okay.
It's a fine line. I mean, it's going to be a tough situation because you're going to see things out there, especially since this is now all brand new. You're going to see things and you're going to remember them when you're debating or considering the case.
Mm-hmm.
But you're going to have to keep in mind what you saw, and if it didn't come out in the testimony or didn't get mentioned, you just got to keep it to yourself.
It's like on this case here with these people with all these cars and stuff. I went out there. It's like I asked to jump by those trailers. They had two trailers sitting there. The one we did this cleaned up with, you know, they had the trailer sitting there. And, you know, there were two of them. They wasn't tagged, but they just framed an axle and the thing was gone. And then when I asked him back, but then he opens up a can of worms where they got shoes, shovels, and this. You know, I had seen things. So I was wrong in asking what I seen or how many vehicles he.
Not because you got in
at the hearing.
I asked him at the hearing, so I'm okay. If you had gone out later and said, oh, yeah.
And just observed yourself that there were 12 untagged vehicles, and then you come back in and say, well, I'm voting against it because there's 12 untagged vehicles. That's improper because that's your own observation and not something you got from the hearing.
Okay.
Okay.
Yep. Because that's what I did. And when
if you go out on one of these pre-hearing, if you go out before the meeting and you've got some concerns, make a note of it and ask somebody. Because then once it's in the record, then you can rely on that one way or the other.
And if you look at the property and you have some concerns, you might want to contact other members so that, you know, we can go out and look at it as well.
Okay.
So, Rick, we I mean,
beforehand we're okay, but afterwards we're not.
Yeah, the better practice is to look at it before as opposed to after.
And we really messed up too on this case that I approved the other night, because that was the table afterwards, and I went to look at it again.
Which one was that?
The one with the double car garage.
The survey.
The surveys.
Yeah.
That's a little wrong there.
And it could be easily overturned because. Mm-hmm.
Because what we did.
That's what we did.
The other thing to keep in mind, and well, use this first case we had tonight as an example, the chances of that case getting appealed are pretty slim. So realistically, if, you know, whatever you do in that case is probably going to be safe. A case like we had here, this Keene-Layton thing, was contested. There was evidence on both sides. One of the objectors was a lawyer. I think you need to keep in mind when you get these contested cases, like this one we had here with the family thing, you have to just make an assumption that that thing could go to court, and those are the ones you want to pay particular attention to and get all your findings into the record when you do make a call on that one. Yeah.
Yeah, that's tough.
Because the other problem, which is the other part of the Keene thing, is that there was really no evidence to support a variance whatsoever. This was, you had granted a special use exception, and I think there was no objection, or at least it didn't go anywhere, to put the thing on the roof. Mm-hmm. And if you remember, it got to rattling so bad they wanted to put it on a pole. The pole was in the setback. But there was not any evidence at all to support a variance. And that's what the court jumped on.
So when you make a motion, you want to address those standards.
Yeah, and that's the good reason to say. I mean, if the guy's sitting there, he's getting ready to close his part of the case, and he hadn't even touched these things, somebody's got to either say to him, you're either going to have to address the standards for granting a variance, or you might as well forget about getting it. Because particularly in a contested case like that one, you can't just grant it. And, you know, I put in the written decision, the court or the board believed that he met the standards. Well, he didn't, because there wasn't anything in the evidence to support that. Now, part of the problem wasn't yours. It was the fact that, you know, how many times do people come in here and they come up to the podium and they get this dumb look on their face like, what do I do next? Well, somewhere along the line, these people have to start realizing they have the burden. Yep. Whoever files for a variance or a special use, it's their burden to meet all those standards and prove them. And if they don't, they have no business being here. It's just it's like, crazy sometimes looking at some of these people that just come up there and, And as Lawrence said to the council the other day, it's not like you don't try. I mean, the girls at the desk are explaining it and handing out the information with the applications. When they walk up to the podium, they're there in front of them.
Yep.
And I know a lot of times John will ask, were you advised that you had to address these standards? Oh, yeah. But, of course, they've completely forgotten about them. I think, unfortunately, it's going to take a few hard lessons for a couple of people that they're going to have to learn, and then the word will get around that, you know, this is the way you got to present these things. But you just can't approve them out of thin air, and that's kind of what happened here. And I think the problem was there was so much focus on the windmill itself, you know, the noise and the size and all that stuff. Everybody kind of lost sight of the fact that it was going to be on a pole in the setback, and nobody ever addressed the variance. But when somebody catches it on appeal, the judges are going to jump on it.
And it could have been that our assumption was we all understood that. But you have to, in your motion, it's necessary to address it so that it's very clear we understood it.
Rick, if we, would that have happened if we knew that the pole, get the variance for the pole, would that been denied then? I mean, overturned?
If what?
We've got to make the pole altogether and setback, right?
No, that was a funny point too, because you made the motion to approve the case, and what you said was, I make a motion that we approve case number such and such for a special use exception. And that's the way it came out in print, and you never mentioned the word variance. And that was one of the objections that the judge never even touched on that one, because I just made the argument, well, when they approved the case, they approved both applications, the special use and the variance. But that's what I meant. The variance just kind of got lost in the shuffle in that whole case.
Okay.
Because they didn't address it. You guys didn't pick it up. Nobody asked them about it. But you granted it. And then the objectors who appealed, that was an easy one for them. Mm-hmm. And the judge didn't even, there were several other issues the judge didn't even address, because he just decided it on that one, because that was the clearest one.
Sure.
So, again, contested cases in particular, these people have to say something, number one, and realistically, if they don't say anything, they have no business expecting you to carry the torch for them.
Right.
So it's their obligation, and then once they've done that, you've got to identify in your findings or in your deliberations or your, when somebody makes a motion, when you vote, mention those same things, just so the record's clear that you understood what they were trying to prove and that they put the evidence in there.
And by the same token, the applicant, the onus is on them to prove they meet the standards. But the opposition can, they also need to prove that it doesn't meet the standards. And so, we've had cases where, we've had two different real estate appraisers. One says it will adversely affect, and the other one says it won't.
No.
So it goes both ways. And you have to weigh that.
So we're really going to have to make them answer the standards now.
Yeah, that's always been.
You should do that for every case, but in particular the ones that have objections.
Yeah. That's one of the reasons that Newcastle and Kent counties probably don't, my assumption is that that's probably one of the reasons they don't have many cases, because it's understood. You've got to meet five standards. If you don't ask.
But isn't that the purpose of the board? Say they met the four standard, couldn't meet the fifth. We give that variance to them?
Well, not supposed to.
Not supposed to.
No, legally.
They're supposed to meet all five of them.
That's the law.
We're completely wrong all the time then. Right?
Well,
huh?
you grant more than you should. But on the other hand, I hate to put this on the record, but just look at the cases we had tonight. The guy with the deck, Warwick Park, he didn't meet the standards.
No.
What was it, why was it necessary for him to have a bigger deck than the one he had? I mean, he bought the place with the deck on it. He knew what he was buying.
Yeah.
And he can expand the deck without going into the setback. It'll be funny looking.
Yeah.
But he just wanted a nice square one, and so he went 2 or 3 feet into the setback. Well, if somebody contests that, it's going to get overturned, because he didn't need that.
Yeah.
And it's self-created. The only reason he's gone into the setback is because he's building it in there. So that's an example of a variance that was probably not earned and realistically shouldn't have been granted.
And the dilemma in not approving it is that long before our time, a precedent was set to somewhat rubber stamp those types of requests. So the dilemma there, if we start not approving these, then the councilmen are going to get phone calls that are going to be, they wouldn't approve that, but they approve one next door, and
10 years ago,
here's another
catch,
one.
It's a catch 22 situation.
Oh, it's a big one.
Here's another example: the guy with the driveway that wanted the variance for the lots of, that could easily have been denied. All he has to do is move his driveway. But he didn't want to spend the money to move the driveway 5 feet, so they come up with this.
Swap in the back.
They're going to swap lands, which creates a situation where one of the lots is now too small and needs a variance. Well, that's, he probably didn't prove his case either, because he could have moved all he had to do is move his driveway 5 feet, 3 feet. There's another one. You know, how many times have people come in here and say, well, I want to put this big garage I'm going to build in the setback so it'll line up with this driveway I've already got. You know, you hear that all the time.
All the time, yeah.
They don't prove their variances. They're just doing it because they don't want to spend the money. I understand that. I mean, that nobody wants to spend a whole lot of money on those things, particularly when they're spending money on the garage. But, you know, maybe that's the trade-off. If they want to, you know,
they're going to have to change the driveway.
Yeah. You can build that, garage without building it in the setback, have exactly what you want, you're just going to have to move your driveway.
Yeah.
And that's, you know, that's the penalty.
So just like this first case we had tonight, that guy didn't meet any standards.
Rarely does any case meet all five standards.
He didn't do anything.
He would have had a hard time. Yeah, I mean, the problem is he's got all these buildings that are too close together, but yeah. It's not your job to solve his problem. His problem is probably find another piece of property and put your church someplace else. But he's got a mess now.
Sure.
Big mess.
Special use exceptions are a lot different. I mean, they're a lot simpler because all they have to do is show they're not going to hurt the other property. And that's unless you get a contested case, that's probably a relatively easy thing to show. I mean, somebody can get up there and say, I don't think it's going to harm another property. If there's nobody there to rebut that, then it's probably going to pass muster. But you get these communications tower cases where they're coming in and saying this isn't going to harm the property, and then the objectors come in with one. You know, then you've got to figure out which one of them makes more sense and that sort of thing. But that's the situation you've got. You know, it gets tough when you get into Cape Windsor and Swan Keys where. They can continue to use old houses, but if to improve those properties, they're all going to need variances. And then, of course, thousands of people have gotten them already. Those are tougher, and maybe, you know, those are the ones you're going to continue to grant probably because there's no way that place is going to survive without them. Now, if the council has a problem with them, they can go in and change the setbacks.
Right.
That's the only way, too. That might not, yeah. That'd be
because that's the reason half these places are in trouble. They started out being mapped as mobile home parks. Now there's single-family subdivisions, and lots are 40 feet wide, which is...
But that question was asked to the council some years ago, and they said they didn't have a problem with it.
With those subdivisions?
With, Cape Windsor and stuff, you know.
So. Yeah, and the other one, the one that Dan Myers had, where the house was built in 1980. John said that's a pretty good example of one that's easy to grant because obviously the lady didn't create it. It's an incredible hardship to correct. You either got to chop something off both ends of the house or pick it up and move it, which is ridiculous for a couple of inches either way. So some like that are pretty easy, but some of them there's no basis at all for them. And I think those are the ones you probably have to start looking at a little bit closer.
Rick, what happened, somebody say, had other variants in this place before, and then we start turning them and say, well, look, you don't meet the standards, and we're going to deny this.
The fact that variants have been granted in some subdivision before is not a basis for that person getting one.
Okay. So make any difference?
No, they can argue that all they want to a judge, and that's an easy one for me.
He can argue.
Judge, he didn't make the standards.
Or he can argue that this is it's a different board.
Yeah, those things change over time. That's not a big deal.
Okay.
Okay.
In other words, we don't table anymore and go look at it.
Best bet is not to look at them after the fact.
Okay.
You can always ask for the staff to make a report like you did with the car thing.
Send it back to the staff.
Yeah. And that's evidence that's proper because it's not coming from you guys.
Right. And it's fact. It's not opinion.
Yeah.
If
you have questions about those cars, you can always have Russ.
Looks like we did.
Out.
Yeah.
He did his work and put it in. That's
good job.
Evidence.
You tell him. Very good.
The fact that it didn't come in at the original public hearing doesn't matter as long as you have left the record open for that to be submitted.
And I think it's safe to say there are a few times, like for example with perfects. You know, I looked at it. It's a fact they haven't been moved. You know, it's not an opinion.
And it's a fact. Yeah,
that's a fact. Well, that's a very, you also fact. Got the chief inspector
saying
confirming
it.
So,
right.
You know, that's better than you guys being the ones to say it.
But you noticed the first time, John, you said that you brought that up to our attention. The signs were there.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, so I mean.
Oh, yeah, because I'd seen it, and you know, and I inquired about it, and he admitted that, yep, they're in violation, and there wasn't much he could do about it.
Dale? Yeah.
Yeah, and so, you know, we asked them to address that, and they tell us in a letter they understand the sign, you know, the sign ordinance and all that, but don't do anything about it. So my question is, are they just, you know, saying we don't care, or do they, you know, not understand it, or what?
Well, and he should understand. He stood it, and he said he understood it. Dale did. So.
Oh, yeah, of course, right? He understands it.
So.
You know.
Dale probably knows the sign ordinance better than we do.
Gosh, yes.
So, you know, does one assume that they're just, you know, telling us we don't care? I hope not. Money's power, but hey.
Yeah. Okay. Thank you, Rick.
Okay.
Thanks, Rick.
Appreciate that very much. Hope for adjournment. Yep.
Motion to adjourn.
All those in favor? Aye.
Five
opposed?
Five feet side.
Meeting is adjourned. Subject to call.
All right, David.